Dr. Griffin's a diabetes consultant at Galway Hospital, University Hospital in Ireland. He was awarded a clinical fellowship in diabetes technology with a special focus on diabetes in pregnancy and at the prestigious Leicester Diabetes Research Centre, along with Professor Pratik Chowdhury. To name just a few publications, Dr. Griffin has been part of studies in hybrid closed loop therapy in adults with type 1 diabetes and above target HbA1c, thyroid dysfunction and chronic kidney disease, social deprivation and diabetic kidney disease. In addition to multiple academic publications, Dr. Griffin has received national and international awards for his research. Tonight, we'd like to welcome Thomas to Diabetes Chat, and we look forward to chatting more about his career, background and all other things, including tech, connection pens, HCL and access in Ireland. We'll also be talking about Language Matters and some of the new programs coming out for Ireland for people that are living with type 2 diabetes. Thank you very much, Thomas, for taking part and coming on our platform. It's priceless having people like you alongside the community and sharing our diabetes community and journeys going forward. Welcome.
Wow, what an introduction, Rich. I think Thomas has actually lost connection. I am not going to make you do that again, because that was one of the best intros I've heard. but honestly, I don't know. We've scared him off already. Claire, I don't know if you can re-add him, because I don't know if my side's just playing up. If you wouldn't mind doing that, that would be absolutely amazing. All right. So,
I've said no request.
Thank you. Thank you. Maybe just some tech issues, but what a fantastic background Thomas has got. And tonight, I think it's going to be really interesting talking about some of them things that you mentioned, Rich, talking about some of the publications that he's been heavily involved in, the closed loop trial in Leicester, some research in thyroid and chronic kidney disease, and also talking about all them amazing technology.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can. I'm going to hand back over to Rich and stop blabbing on. All right, over to you, Rich.
Thank you. No, I heard I could hear everything you were saying. I'm not sure why you couldn't hear me, and apologies about that. I guess just one thing before you start, because you've said all these lovely things about me, but maybe I could just say the value that Diabetes Chat adds to for people living with diabetes, for healthcare providers who look after people living with diabetes, and just I think people in general getting the opportunity to listen to yourselves. I think it's really amazing, and I can't commend you highly enough on setting this up and the great work that you have done. And I think every award that you've gotten for this excellent program is really well deserved. And thank you all for this, actually. And thank you very much for affording me the opportunity to be here today.
Well, bless you. Bless you, Thomas. It's really kind of you to be part of it. And going forward, we just want to share our community and our platform to help others, you know, reach better management of the diabetes, you know, regardless of what type they have and, you know, how long they've had it. You know, I know when we talk about the technology and stuff, I mean, that going forward, it's incredibly, I mean, the technology now just makes things so much easier, you know. And I know Emma and, you know, the Bartha, there's been, you know, lots of Tom Crabtree, lots of people pushing for technology, and it's probably not for everyone, but if you can get access to it, it's life-changing. I mean, I've been using an open source platform for a number of years, having met a peer support group locally in Derby, and it's it's just incredible, really, that I'm able to do it, you know. And it's life-changing, it's life-enhancing. And we talk about time and range, but time and happiness, when you've got technology on your side, like the diabetes balloon, if you like, we're keeping it up. Like we do a couple of events, JDRF one recently, where we've got, I don't know, 40, 50 balloons, 60 balloons up in the air. It's almost mine's like filled with hydrogen. I know Sean Carpenter, he's got a similar platform, and it just lessens the load and gives you time to live your life and not worry so much about your diabetes. So thank you for coming on. And, you know, it's just an incredible moment, you know, in time. These chats are incredible.
They're fantastic. It's amazing what you've done.
Thank you very much. I've got some questions that basically 9 second questions that we ask our guest speakers. I mean, I've introduced you. Basically, question one is, what's your name and occupation? Would you like to tell us a little bit more about your role in a, you know, in a more, you know, sort of a more,
yeah, let's give it a go. So Tomás Griffin is my name. I'm from Galway, which is a city on the west coast of Ireland. I've born and bred in Galway and have lived in Galway most of my life. I'm currently very fortunate and privileged to diabetes care is delivered in Ireland. Historically, all people living with type 2 diabetes, or maybe not all, but most, were looked after primarily in the hospital. And we've been very fortunate in Ireland that there's been a program rolled out essentially overnight, whereby people living with type 2 diabetes can get access to their care closer to their home. And they can get access to a consultant diabetologist, a diabetes nurse, a dietitian, fortunately in my own area, a physiotherapist, and a podiatrist as needed. So I work on that in the community. And then as the other 50% of my time, I'm in the hospital. And I enjoy working with people who live with type 1 diabetes, diabetes technologies, diabetes and kidney disease. And I also do some work as a general physician looking after kind of acute medicine.
Wow, crikey. You've got so many talents. That's just incredible to hear. We've got two or three different types of diabetes in the UK, but it's incredible how you're able to help make changes in Ireland and bring, you know, technology and those advancements forward, you know, and the support is massive, you know, the support network, you know, like Tom, when he set Diabetes Chat up, you know, he had diabetes for over sort of 15, 16 years, and he just felt he needed to speak to people about it. And that's where this platform originated, you know, and I think as a community together, you're stronger when you've got that community spirit and that that ability to share, you know, any concerns or any worries, or, you know, what should I do about this? Or, you know, you can reach out to the community, and, you know, we're sort of a friendly group of people that have one common goal and we want to live our best lives, kind of thing.
I think, as I say to people myself, and this is what I say to my own team, we win together or we lose together. I don't know if that kind of fits in this space.
Yeah, no, I can totally relate to that. Yeah, you're part of a team, and you know, you're only as strong as your weakest member, I guess. You know, I mean, I've had times where I've had hypos. I used to do a lot of climbing years ago, and all my friends would have like spare glucose or Mars bars or Snickers, and I was in the Italian Dolomites, and I'd gone hypo, and I said, "Has anyone got anything to eat?" And all the guys came out, "I've got a Mars bar, I've got a marathon or a Snickers, I've got a can of pop or whatever." So, you know, that's nice to be able to have, you know, I don't hide it from anyone, my diabetes. I've always been open about it. And I think that's important, you know. But to get back to the questions, I'm going off topic a little bit, Thomas. Question two, if you were diabetic, I know you're not diabetic, but if you were diabetic, what would your go-to hypo treatment be, if you've got one?
Do you know the 150ml mini Coke cans?
Oh, yes, yes.
It's definitely what I'd go for, 100%.
That's a very good. I mean, Coke's got a lot more sugar in. I know there's a big thing on the government drove like sugar tax and stuff. They basically reduced the amount of sugar in Lucozade. And I think Coca-Cola's stayed pretty, you know, high in sugar. And I mean, that's good, because if you're hypo and you're out walking or whatever you're doing, a can of Coke makes a world of difference. It works really quickly. So that's
just really handy, isn't it? Easy to carry. It's a bit like Lyft, except for maybe a little bit more tasty, perhaps.
Yes. Yeah, I can agree to that. Yeah, totally. Right. Question three. If you had the choice of insulin pens or pump, what would you prefer and why?
So I can only say pump. I'll tell you why, because when I'm doing a clinic for people living with type 1 diabetes, I walk around with a kangaroo, and the kangaroo has two pumps attached to him, which are the two pumps we kind of have readily available in Ireland. Of course, I also love
technology. I like the idea of the pump working in the background to keep me safe.
Yeah.
I like the idea of being able and pump. So it's really amazing.
Wow, that's great. Great that sharing that with us. I mean, I remember back in like 1984, I was on like, I got like glass syringes and I'd have to mix two types of insulin, cloudy first and then fast acting, like rapid and insulitard. And basically that defined what you were going to do for the next 8 hours because it had worked for about 8 hours, like rapid, would it? The fast acting insulin. And but now with the modern insulins and hybrid closed loop coming to the fore, you know, it's making people's lives more easy to manage, you know, and lessen the load on your mental health and stuff. So that's fabulous.
No, I think we're really lucky with the kind of advances in technology and the advances, I think, in insulin. And I think as time goes by, we're going to have insulins that will work even quicker than the insulins that are there now. And I think when we get an insulin that works almost instantaneously, I think that's when that'll be another big change, I think.
Wow, yeah, that'll be incredible. Yeah, I use one called Lumjev, and that's very good. I mean, it works quite well in my pump.
Quite jealous in Ireland, I guess, because I had access in the UK to Lumjev, but at the moment we don't actually have access to Lumjev in Ireland, or in the Republic of Ireland at least. I think it's available in Northern Ireland.
What? You know, like when we talk about that, Thomas, why is that? Is that some sort of, is that government led, or is it some sort of health service led thing? Do they need to get clarity on its?
So I think the companies have to apply to get these insulins on the market. I'm not sure, actually, to be honest, if Lumjev have applied to become on the formulary in Ireland or not.
I think it's gone a couple of times, but I think Thomas can hear us, but I'm not sure whether.
I couldn't hear either of you guys, either Thomas or you, Rich. It all went quiet.
It all went quiet for me as well. I've just sent Thomas another invite to speak, though, because he's dropped to the listener.
Cool, Claire. That's fab. Are you still there, Tom?
Yeah, can you hear me, Rich?
Yes, mate.
Sorry,
yeah, I
don't know what the problems are. The technology just doesn't seem to be on our side tonight. But hopefully, Claire, you can get Thomas back on the panel. But really fascinating to start to the night, learn a little bit about his background and the different types of insulins. I can see he's back. Our apologies, must be our side. Rich, I'll let you go back to question four. Over to you.
Oh, cheers, Tom. Yeah, sorry, Thomas. I don't know what. We got some technical issues. I don't know why, but we've just got a couple of dropped out connectivity issues. It's probably the World Wide Web or something. Do you know what I mean? It's.
I think that's always when you're talking about technology, that's always what happens, right?
Yeah. If you've got a Libra failing, you know, you need to act on it kind of thing. You know, that's another That's another story, you know. I mean, generally speaking, technology is really good when it works, you know, and obviously being diabetic, it's really good when it works. If it does fail, you have to have a backup plan, don't you? And like with technology, you know, streaming and stuff like this, it's incredible now. You know, years ago, there's none of this, and just opening up to people, you know, you can actually communicate with people throughout the world on platforms like this. And, you know, I've got to say, Tom Dean is just to bring diabetes chat to the position it's in now, all credit to him. God bless him. One of the questions was, what do you think is worse, Thomas? Do you think feeling hypo or hyperglycemic?
I would imagine it has to be hypo, right? So I think I'd feel very anxious, hungry, irritable, sweaty, and shaky. The word some people who live with diabetes use in Ireland for this, and I'm not sure if it's a terminology that's used in the UK, is feeling hangry.
Yes. Yeah, I can relate to that. Yes. Hypo's quite, I mean, it can come on very, very quickly. I mean, I work at the Toyota manufacturing plant in Derby, and I mean, I've got closed loop, but I've got like a DIY closed loop, and it suspends insulin. So if I've got a watch that tells me what my blood sugar is, and obviously it's linked to my phone, so I can see instantly what my blood sugar's doing, generally speaking, and I can act on it without worrying about going hypo. Do you know what I mean? And that's priceless, really. You know, and I know the technology is becoming more and more available, and I don't think I could do my job without having a decent system like that.
Oh, no, I think it's game changing knowing that the pump will kind of suspend and help protect you if you're on the way down, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. I think a lot of people would say the same, actually, hypo. Right. Let's go to the next section. Right. We'd like to get a bit to know a bit more about you, and can you tell your the diabetes community about your connection to diabetes and your background in diabetes? What fascinates you about diabetes, and did you know anyone, or have you known anyone, friends, family members who has been affected by diabetes?
Where to start, I guess. I think that the fascination, one of the things I've always liked, I think, in college and throughout life is looking at numbers and tracings and patterns. And I think getting the opportunity to work with people living with diabetes allows me to work with kind of numbers and people and seeing how different, more insulin or less insulin kind of affect blood glucose levels. I must say I find that fascinating. In terms of people I've known, I think over the years I've garnered a huge number of friends and colleagues who've lived with type 1 and type 2 diabetes, and I can see some of them are on the line, and thanks very much for tuning in, and it's been a privilege to get to meet these people and to know them. I guess the first person I can remember was my granny. She had leukemia and also had diabetes. I'm never sure whether she lived with type 1 or type 2 diabetes, and that wasn't really clear at the time. She was on insulin, but I think one of the things that impacted me most and has kind of come with me throughout the years is kind of the way that that whenever we were eating or anything, the way sugar was talked about, not in a positive light. And I think I hope I've used my experiences seeing how people would refer to sugar around my granny to kind of inform my own use of language, and to try and help inform other people's use of language as well.
Yes. Yeah.
I never thought that again, and I think it's fine. I think at the time, probably, certainly in Ireland, I think that was probably 30 odd years ago. And as you say, you mentioned kind of 30 or 40 years ago, you're using glass syringes and these things. I just think that the awareness that the way you speak to someone, or the way you address someone, or the way you use language around a person can influence the way they feel. The way yes. they behave and the way other people view that person wasn't available. But that's one thing I'm quite passionate about now is the correct use of language, and not just in terms of diabetes. I think the way we refer to people who live with any medical problem or who live with anything probably can be improved overall, I think. And I think that's something I'm very passionate about improving. And it's something we work on, and something I teach our medical students. And it's become, when I'm asked to talk about diabetes now, I don't actually start anymore by talking about the types of diabetes or the treatment of diabetes, or in fact how diabetes occurs, I do two things. The first thing I start about is how a consultation would look like, and maybe I describe how a less favorable consultation would look.
Yeah.
How a less favorable consultation doesn't usually result in a good outcome, either for the person delivering the consultation or for the person who is at the receiving end of the consultation. And then we talk a little bit about language matters and the correct use of kind of terminology. So talking about the sugar, for example, or how people perceive that maybe type 1 diabetes is that people who live with type 1 diabetes maybe shouldn't consume sugar. We both know obviously that's not true, but actually getting the word out there and explaining this to people and explaining how stigmatizing the incorrect use of the language and words can be, I think is really, really important.
Yeah, I totally agree, Thomas. That's really well put. I mean, I've seen both ends of the spectrum, really. You know, we'd go to clinic in like the mid to late 80s, and you'd have a diary with your blood sugar readings in, what you've had to eat, the insulin you've had, and you'd have a test called fructosamine, which is a bit like HbA1c, but it did only test your hemoglobin saturation on that particular day. So it wouldn't give the clinicians, your consultant, any idea of anything. So it was reliant on the diary, and then obviously you'd have a blood sugar, say, I don't know, you were 18 or something last Thursday, and they'd sort of say, why were you 18 last Thursday, what happened? I mean, to be honest, I can't remember what happened last Thursday, never mind back then, you know. So it's like, language matters. It does matter, because it can knock you for it. If you don't get if you don't be compassionate, and like, you're very, you sound like a wonderful gentleman, a professor that knows the right way about stuff. Now, back in the old days, I'd feel lost, or I'd feel alienated by certain clinicians. I wouldn't like to mention anybody's names, but now language does matter, because you're an individual, you're a human being. You've got to look after each other and others, you know, and like the community role now with, you know, the peer support groups and stuff. It's all about respecting others and being kind and considerate and not criticizing. You know, I remember at school when I was 14, when I got back to school after my diagnosis, they'd say nasty things, like, you know, I wouldn't like to say, but there was some horrible things said back in the day. And I think going forward, you know, stigma has been attached to diabetes or any chronic illness, and now there's no need for it. There's no need for it at all. You know, people need to feel loved and wanted, and you know, I think you're just an absolute star, you know, and discussing that was very kind. Thank you very much.
No, thank you. And I think it's to try and put yourself in someone's shoes for a day. It doesn't really matter what shoes they are, but it's to try and see how that person would feel if you were that person and someone kind of said something to you, and that person probably forgets it, but the person who says it probably forgets that they said it at all, and maybe doesn't even realize the impact that their words are having. Actually, kind of, it's education though, because I think it's all fine saying that people are saying the wrong things, but until which with Language Matters and all the different movements that are there, and peer support and education of healthcare providers and education of the media and education of the public, making people aware of the importance of language is really, really powerful, and can really help to improve people's mental health, can help to improve outcomes for people, and can just give people a better quality of life. And as I said, it doesn't matter whether we're speaking about living with diabetes or whatever the chronic condition is. I just think we all need to be cognizant of kind of what impact our words can have on a particular person.
Yeah, very, very well spoken. That's so true. That's so true, Thomas. Thank you for sharing that. You're a consultant in endocrinology. What do you love most about your job, and what challenges do you face?
So I think, what do I love most about my job? Well, it's great to get to work, to come to work every day.
Yeah.
And get to meet people and to try and help a person every day. I must say I love sitting down with a person and looking at a CGM tracing, for example, and then working with that person to try and figure out the different patterns and things that have happened, and maybe ways that we can work together to tweak some settings, or maybe to tweak the way exercise is managed, or some action to try and improve outcomes for that person. And I think the thing now with CGM is that you can see the improvement. If you find something that you can work with a person to tweak, you can see the improvement maybe the next or the change the next day. And I think there's a lot of satisfaction in being able to work with a person, then go back a couple of days later, have a chat with that person again, have a look at the CGM trace and see the things have got a bit better. I think that's really satisfying. I think getting to work with technology, I really love having access to technology. And I think working with pumps and helping to get people access to pump therapy, helping the person to get the right device at the right time to meet their needs in the right place, with the community, delivering care closer to where a person lives. And we think we're probably delivering, well, we hope, it's easy for me to say this, I guess, but we hope we're delivering better care. So for people who live with type 2 diabetes, as I say, where we deliver clinic now, there's free parking. There's loads of parking. We have spacious clinic rooms. We have people get to, we run what we call a multi-clinician clinic. So when you come to clinic, you're referred sometimes to me, I guess. And then we bring the person in. We have a chat. We see what their specific needs are. So that could be some medication. It could be to see a dietitian. It could be to see a podiatrist. It could be to see a physiotherapist. It could be just to have a chat to try and tease things out to see if there's some side effects of a medicine. And if we were able to stop that medicine or change that medicine or deliver the medicine differently, maybe the person would feel better. And I think just the feedback we're getting from our community clinics and from people who live with type 1 diabetes who are getting access to the technology, it really motivates me to get up and to do it again the next day. And I think that's really enjoyable. And to come home kind of seeing some of these changes, you just come home with a smile on your face.
Oh, wow, Tops. Thank you for sharing. That's amazing. Honestly, you really are. Wow, tonight's just incredible. Absolutely incredible.
I think, oh, go on.
Sorry, go on.
No, you go ahead.
I got one more question. Research, you've been part of some diabetes research. What has your role been in this? And can you talk us through some of the diabetes publications that you've also been involved in?
So I've been very privileged to get involved with different aspects of research and to be able to work with people living with diabetes. And I've had some excellent mentors. I think in Galway, there's three absolute powerhouses who've influenced my career. Professor Fidel Madon, Professor Tim O'Brien, and Professor Sean Dineen. And they inspired me to become a diabetologist. So when I was in medical school, these were the three professors of medicine. And Professor O'Brien would come in at 7 o'clock in the morning to give us tutorials on diabetes or collapse or headache or whatever the topic might be. And then you'd still see him in the evening, full of energy and full of beans, at 7 o'clock writing a grant or calling a person because they got a blood result or just doing something like that. And I must say that's very inspiring. And they inspired me to do research. And I guess my first taste of research was probably actually in breast cancer. So prostate cancer. So there was this opportunity advertised when I was in medical school to do some work on prostate cancer. And I said I'd like to give that a go. And that's where I got the bug for doing research. And I've tried to maintain an interest. I guess some of the more interesting ones I was involved with was during my PhD. I was working with Professor O'Brien and Professor Matt Griffin, and they got a large European grant to look at the impact of stem cell or stromal cell therapy on the rate of decline of kidney function and diabetic kidney disease. So a stem cell is just kind of a cell that hasn't differentiated and doesn't know what it's going to be, and it can help to reduce inflammation in a person. So diabetic kidney disease is sometimes associated with inflammation. So the theory would be is if you get some of these stem cells, it might reduce inflammation and reduce the rate of decline in kidney function. So we're very fortunate. So in Ireland, we get probably the first stem cell infusion, maybe certainly in Ireland or the UK, and maybe even in Europe, for a person living with diabetes. And some of those results have been published. And again, the numbers are small, but it shows the therapy is probably safe, and that it might, there's just a trend that it might slow decline in kidney function. Then I got really lucky and I got to go and work with Professor Prateek Chowdhury, who I'm sure you all know. And I think if anyone ever gets the opportunity to work in Leicester, it's like Disneyland. You go in there and everything is possible. And to be honest with you, it's also like you get starstruck. So you walk in and you see Melanie Davies,
Kamlesh Kunti, Pratik Chowdhury. And you're like, these are absolute rock stars in the diabetes world. And they're just amazing people.
Yes.
When you go to Leicester, there's no, it's a can-do attitude. There's no, you come up with an idea and the idea is good. And people think it will work. And there's nothing to stop it working. There's just so much support. As I say, it's like a child in Disneyland. Amazing. And I just can't speak highly enough of the opportunity to go to Leicester and of the mentors that I've seen there. I think one of the things I was most excited about in Leicester was getting involved in hybrid closed-loop insulin pumps. We had started some hybrid closed-loop insulin pumps in Ireland before I went to Leicester, but on a very small scale. We probably started maybe 8 or 10 people, and the results were amazing. But when I got to work in Leicester, there was trials of hybrid closed loops. There was the NHS pilot to roll out hybrid closed loop therapy for people living with type 1 diabetes in the NHS. And we got to work with all the different pumps. And I got fortunate that I got to work with Tom Crabtree and Emma Wilmot. And we published an audit looking at the impact of hybrid closed loop insulin pump therapy. And what that audit showed was that people who started hybrid closed loop insulin pump therapy, who were already on a pump, who already had Libre, who already had a very high level of kind of education on type 1 diabetes, had a 1.6% or about 15 millimole reduction in A1C. And I thought this was amazing. We also got a chance to work with Michelle, who's a psychologist in Leicester. And we were looking at kind of patient-reported outcomes and also some interviews for people who were part of the pilot. And what we found, and this isn't published yet, but that 95% of people who went on hybrid closed-loop insulin pump therapy found it better than their previous therapy. And the previous therapy was insulin pump and Libre. And I thought this was really fascinating and amazing. And I felt really fortunate, I think, to get an opportunity to be involved in that. And with Professor Chowdhury, I got to help him with the ADAPT study, which is looking at the Medtronic 780G. And it's one of the landmark studies in hybrid closed-loop insulin pump therapy. And again, the results are very similar to what we found in the audit. There was a significant reduction in A1C, and people's quality of life improved substantially with hybrid closed-loop insulin pump therapy. We're actually very fortunate in Ireland with hybrid closed-loop insulin pump therapy. And as I alluded to earlier, I walk around clinic with a kangaroo and two pumps. And the part of this is we don't, whereas in the NHS, there's a restriction on pump therapy is probably a little bit greater. In Ireland, we can prescribe insulin pump therapy a little bit more freely, I think, than in the NHS. So we're currently trying to increase the number of people we're starting in pump therapy in our centre. I think maybe 2 years ago, we were on about 2 or 3 a month, and we've ambitious plans to get up to 20 a month, maybe in April or May this year. So a tenfold increase in the number of people who get access to hybrid closed-loop insulin pump therapy, and we're very excited.
Is that a mixture of pumps, if I can ask, Thomas? Is that like Omnipod?
So in Ireland,
T-Slum, what's the offering in Ireland?
The offering, unfortunately, is different. One of the things we don't have in Ireland is Omnipod. Right. And lots of people would love to get access to Omnipod in Ireland, but it's just not currently available. So our offering is predominantly the Medtronic 780G Tandem T-Slim with Control IQ and the Ipso with CAMAPS.
Yeah.
We're having a little bit of, and I think this is kind of a worldwide problem, I think, we're having a little bit of difficulty, I guess, getting access to the different pieces of Ipso at the moment. So our centre offers all three, but practically at the moment, our supply issues kind of mean that it's the Tandem or Medtronic predominantly.
Brilliant. Rich, any sort of follow-up? I think that was absolutely amazing, sharing all the fantastic research that you've been proudly part of and highlighting, obviously, Leicester Diabetes Centre. I think them guys are absolutely amazing. Wonder like Lauren and James Ridgway and people like that, they're just fantastic.
Fortunate in Leicester, like I have friends for life.
Yeah.
I saw James, he was on chat earlier. James is just amazing.
Yes.
I think you've had James on before, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
And honestly, like, he's just top guy.
He really is. Brilliant
and a great educator and great in advocating for peer support. Yes. And in for advocating for people who live with type 1 diabetes. But in Leicester, once you walk in, there's people. The amazing thing about Leicester is Everyone is like James. Everyone is amazing. It's just, honestly, I can't describe it.
That's excellent. Honestly, it's just looking forward, looking towards the future and the outlook for our community in terms of any type of diabetes. You're an absolute legend. You know, I really mean that, Thomas. I mean, you've got such passion and you inspire others. You know, you speak volumes of your professionality and how you want to care for people going forward and deliver the best treatment for people that are living with a condition 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, which is, you know, the mental load alone is enough. But, you know, you pushing everything forward and trying to get access to technology and improving people's lives, oh, it's just incredible. Thank you very much for sharing all the stuff this evening. It's been a wonderful, wonderful chat. Tom, do you want to bring anything in?
Oh, mate, I'm just fully enjoying tonight. And there's so much love for Thomas on Twitter as well, especially from the Irish community. Shiv sending messages out. James, he did post earlier on, he said, Thomas is one of the most approachable and down-to-earth healthcare professionals that I have ever known. And them emojis with the star eyes, absolutely love it. And Irene says, Thomas, he is amazing. I was in hospital in his patch, Galway, in December. And it's just great to see this. It's great to see. And it's lovely. You know what? It's lovely that we're in an area now in social media that we do have the fortunate to be able to connect to people like yourselves and see people's posts. And
it's gone again, I think.
Oh, is it gone again? Oh, no. Maybe I am bad. Oh, all good?
I'm still here.
Thomas is still here.
I think we're all still here at this time.
Oh, it must be me. Maybe I'm just bad luck tonight. Claire, all good?
I think it's just Claire.
Just Claire. Mark, Richard, just to double confirm.
Yeah, I'm honestly.
It's Claire.
I'm fine.
Cool. To be fair, Claire is in the middle of nowhere on a holiday in a log cabin, so she's into this funny not working as well. But honestly, Thomas, I think it's great to have you here tonight. And I'm just trying to look at the sort of questions on Hyperloop, if there was anything for that section. I think we covered most of it there. What can I just add your sort of, what's your thoughts on people on doing DIY? Because obviously, from what I understand and get from it, is it's really transformed where we are really with sort of pumping and closed looping now. What's your thoughts on where DIY came from and kind of its thoughts are on what people may use it? What's your sort of feelings with that?
I think DIY is great. I think there's a couple of caveats, I suppose. I think there's a piece where the person using the DIY probably needs to be, and I guess everyone here can probably lend to this a bit better than myself, I think, probably needs to be a little bit proficient. Kind of, it's not, if you have the Medtronic or the Tandem, I guess it's more plug and play in the sense that the support available if something goes wrong. Yeah, I always get the feeling that there's a little bit less support and you need to be able to be a bit more maybe resilient, I guess, if something goes wrong, that you're able to go back on the multiple daily injections and things like that. Mm-hmm. I think this obviously can happen with the kind of company or commercial closed loops as well. I think having community or peer support for DIY is essential, and to be part of peer support groups and so on, so that you can go and ask friends and colleagues for support if there's something that's not quite working out.
Yeah,
I think time will come maybe when the commercial systems, I don't know, and again, I suspect people here can probably lend to this better than myself. I think a time will come when commercial systems become so good that maybe DIY mightn't make as much sense anymore. But I do understand that it offers you to kind of a more bespoke setup than a commercial system will ever allow.
Yeah,
I think there's huge advantages to that. I think one of the challenges is how to set up centers to best support people who are on DIY, because I think there's people are nervous. I think people, especially if you don't have a high volume of pump use or you haven't seen too many DIY setups before, I think people can get quite nervous, I think, when they come in. or DIY systems come into the hospital or whatever. But I think, as I say, with some education, support, and so on, and especially with that publication by Dana Lewis in the New England Journal of Medicine looking at DIY being better than, I can't remember actually what the comparator was, but it was DIY was excellent in that study. I think people will start to become much more comfortable with DIY. And again, I have no problem supporting someone with DIY should someone want to do that, you know.
Brilliant. I think that's great. Rich, to bring you in there, was anything to follow on that? Because you're our DIY expert in this this field. Any response or any additional thoughts?
Yeah, I totally agree with Thomas. You know, I've got clinicians that are very supportive. You know, we've got a peer support group. We're very lucky to have a peer support group. Sean and Sarah Jeremy, basically, I met them in 2018. I was kind of at the end of my tether with my diabetes, and they sort of, they got watches with the blood sugars on. I'm like, have you done that? You know, and they said, oh, I've got this platform called Extra, which like a blood sugar, it basically gets your data from your sensor and it tells you what your blood sugar is on your phone. And then obviously they went on to this closed loop, and I was just fascinated by it. You know, a bit like you, Thomas, you know, we're looking at technology and stuff, and I wanted to live a better life and manage my diabetes, take more. I mean, I've never smoked. I've always looked after myself, basically. I still turn out footballing. I'm relatively fit for 55, and I just wanted I wanted to try and get better management, because, you know, 35 years in, and I was on a pump, but obviously the basal insulin on a pump, you know, if you don't keep an eye on your blood sugars, it can drop. But now with hybrid closed loop and DIY closed loop, it suspends insulin if it feels you've got enough insulin within the algorithm to manage, you know. And there's different platforms, obviously, but yeah, you certainly need some training with DIY and commercial closed loop systems. But looking forwards, it's just it's like lessening the load, and it makes a significant difference to quality of life. I think anyone that's got hybrid closed loop or run their own platform, like either DOI or open source, you know, as long as they've got that, done the homework and they've done the research and they've looked at, made sure they've followed objectives, if it's Android APS, or they've asked people that have got the experience, you know, I'm not saying it's for everyone, but it's certainly a better method of managing an illness like diabetes, particularly type 1, and it lessens the load hugely. And maybe one day everyone will be able to access it. You know, I know it's difficult, you know, funding's an issue, getting access, like Thomas says, you know, there's only certain pumps you can get in Ireland, which is a shame, because, you know, like insulin, I saw a post on the chat about Lumjev's not being approved to be used in Ireland, and, you know, Eli Lilly have not allowed that or something. But the thing is,
Rich, are you there? Or is it just me now?
We've lost Rich.
I think one of the things we do need to work on, and everyone needs to work on, is getting better access to, or more timely access, I think, to the different devices and the different insulins as they become available. Yeah. I think this is a thing both in Ireland, in the UK, and across Europe. And you just wonder, there must be a better way. Because again, we've been fortunate. We've got a few new devices come on board in Ireland in the last kind of couple of months. One is Libre 2. So prior to that, we just had access to Libre 1. And the other one that's come on board last week actually is Dexcom One Plus, mm-hmm. Which I know you don't have in the UK yet, I feel. And Dexcom One Plus is just Dexcom 7, minus the Urgent Low Soon, Urgent Low, and Rise, and all alarms, I think.
Can you hear me now again, ladies and gentlemen?
Yes, Rich.
Sorry, I don't know what happened there. I think my phone went on standby. Norman's gave me a program called Caffeine, which leaves my phone on all the time, but I was waffling on and going on and on about availability, and obviously but some pumps aren't available to others, you know, within different countries and all the rest of it. But one thing that you need to know with hybrid closed loop, it's not, I mean, the commercial systems are probably more suited for people that aren't sort of as tech orientated. You know, but I think being diabetic, you have to have, you have to be like a mathematician, a dietitian. You have to have a lot of qualities in order to manage your condition. But I think hybrid closed loop will allow people to live a better life and take a lot less. I don't know. They'll give them, it, it will help people get back to the a more normal way of life. I mean, I was 14, so don't really know what it was like before diabetes. So I've had it nearly 40 years. So, it's life changing, and hopefully everyone will get access to it in the next sort of 5 years, like Partha hopes. You know, he's got a big rollout plan, and well, the NHS England anyway, I know it really wants to be worldwide, not just nationwide and stuff. Yeah. And guys,
can I bring Thomas into that, Rich? Because I know from what you sent me the other day, Thomas, is a new Irish Type 1 guidelines that are coming in that are similar to the sort of NICE, is that coming in, publishing soon, the next couple of months? What is this and what is expected of this guidelines and the sort of implementation of this, do you think, for not only your sort of area, but wider of Ireland?
So the single biggest, we've adopted essentially NICE 22 type 1 diabetes guidelines have been adopted in Ireland, and they're being contextualized to an Irish context. So some pieces about, say, diabetes retinal screening that occur in the UK wouldn't really, you need to put in about the Irish diabetes retinal screening program or the Irish pregnancy guidelines. So they're the pieces that have changed. The biggest change for people living with type 1 diabetes in Ireland is that CGM is now available for every person living with type 1 diabetes in Ireland. And that's a sea change in the last kind of year, actually. Before that, it was really only readily available if you're under the age of 21. So if you got a CGM aged 20 years and 364 days, it meant that you had a CGM forever. But if you got a CGM aged 21 and one day, if you didn't have a CGM, you didn't get a CGM necessarily. So that's a big sea change, and it's going to be instilled in our type 1 diabetes guidelines. And we have a health technology assessment, which confirms that continuous glucose monitoring will be available for all people living with type 1 diabetes in Ireland. And this is something I think we're really proud of.
Yes.
I think the proportion of people getting access to CGM, so essentially in our clinic where we are, every person living with type 1 diabetes is offered a CGM. Not everyone wants one, but everyone is offered. And sometimes I feel we offer it a bit too much, because you nearly think you're trying to push it a bit too much, but nearly every single person has been offered at this point. And if they haven't, they should come and just let us know. If you live with type 1 diabetes and you're in our catchment area and you haven't been offered, we apologize, and it's certainly available for you should you want it.
Absolutely.
What does it mean for a closed loop? As you know, NICE doesn't really, the NICE 2022 guidelines doesn't really specify closed loop. It says refer to the pump guidelines. So I guess we haven't got that far yet. But in terms of access to pump, as I said, in our own center, again, I walk around with a kangaroo with two pumps in the front and show everyone what it is and ask people if they would like it. So we're very, we are offering hybrid closed loop to people who live with type 1 diabetes in our area. I think one of the things that in Ireland we need to work on is this kind of, and this is the same in the UK, if you remember Partha's Libra maps, where some part of the UK had 20% of people offered CGM and another part had 80%. Mm-hmm. I think the same situation applies in Ireland, that there's parts of the country that have lower uptake of CGM and parts of the country that have lower uptake of pumps, for example. And I don't know if you know a great advocate for people who live with type 1 diabetes in Ireland called Kate Jowalski.
No.
I'll try her second name again. Kate Jowalski.
No.
She works for Diabetes Ireland, but she did this wonderful piece of work maybe in 2016, looking at the proportion of adults who had access to pump therapy. And there was a difference in the different regions in Ireland between 3 and 12%. So if you lived in one part of the country, 3% of people living with type 1 diabetes had an insulin pump. But if you lived in a different part of the country, 12% of people. So kind of a fourfold difference in access to pump therapy, depending on where you lived in Ireland. And I think that's something, much like Partha worked on in the UK, I think that's something we really need to work on in Ireland, is reducing any disparity that might potentially exist. So that if you're in Galway or you're in Dublin or no matter where you are, your access to pump therapy or to CGM or to any other devices that are funded by our health service should be kind of identical, I guess.
100%. Let's talk about connected pens then, because we've had a fantastic chat talking about pumps, hybrid closed loop, and people maybe still be using disposable pens, but in the last couple of years, connected pens have become a thing. What, for the people that are listening right now, what are connected pens, Thomas, and what sort of options are available? And can you maybe just talk us through some of features of these smart pens? I've always described smart pens, connected pens, as that sort of bridge between disposable pens and a pump, and then obviously now you've got hybrid closed loop, but that sort of middle gap where it is a bit smarter, where you can do things like obviously check your last time you injected and how much, and it's really good that you can connect it to the app and stuff. But I won't give all the spoilers away because I'm sure you'll tell us a little bit more about connected pens.
I must say, I think I this is my belief, I think standard of care now nearly should look like maybe that the first offering that anyone should be offered, I think, is a smart connected device. I'll maybe lend to why I think that is the case. So what is a smart connected insulin device? So you have smart connected pens, smart connected caps, smart connected attachments. And they're the new generation of technologies designed to help people on insulin injections with diabetes management. So most smart devices automatically record insulin dosing information. So that's the dose of insulin administered, the time it's been administered, and how long it's been since it's been administered. The device, you can look back to see how long since you've had your last injection and the number of units you gave at that time. And I think that's very, very handy. And a lot of people say to me in clinic, sometimes they've forgotten. And I think, you know, with this device, you reduce the risk of double dosing, for example. So sometimes you just get distracted, I guess, and you're not sure if you've given the short-acting insulin before the meal, and then you're after the meal and the blood glucose level is rising and you can't decide whether you should go again or whether you should wait and know that it'll come back down. And I think a smart connected pen or device will certainly help with that.
Yes.
Certainly busy. Again, just life can be very chaotic and busy, and when you have children at home, we have two smallies here, and just sometimes you forgot what you were supposed to be doing. What's available? So the main ones that I've worked with is the NovoPen 6, and that's only for Novo Nordisk insulins, and you can adjust in dose of 1 unit increments, and the NovoPen Echo Plus, and that's one you can adjust in dose of 0.5 unit increments. The other one we have available in Ireland is the Medtronic N-Pen. Again, that's just for short-acting insulin. I think you can use Humalog, NovoRapid, and Fiasp, but I could be wrong on that. Down the line, there's a whole spread of different devices I've read about. So the Lilly Tempo, I don't know if that's available in the UK yet. So that's for Lilly insulin.
I think it'll be
for Lumjev. I think it'll be for Humalog. There's one for Insulin Check Connect. I think that'll be some of the Novo Nordisk insulins, GoCap. So there's lots of companies now who are making different caps. But the two that are kind of that I've seen and that are available are the N-Pen and the NovoPen 6 and the NovoPen Echo Plus.
Do you think
some of these?
Do you think the connected pens are going to take over sort of disposable pens? So in the next couple of years, sort of disposable pens will sort of fade out, because you can do the same thing basically with a connected pen, but then there's so many more added features you can do with it.
I can't really see how, especially with kind of climate change, global warming, and the fact that we should all aim to recycle more and be greener, it's hard to see how disposable pens will continue. So one example is a person, I did this calculation for a talk I was given recently. I reckoned that a person living with type 1 diabetes might use, I think, 60 short-acting and 60 long-acting disposable pens a year. I picked a dose of insulin and did this calculation, so I'm not sure I can't remember what the units were. But you could just use two disposable pens. And if you had 120 kind of disposable NovoRapid pens, that's the amount of pens required to make one of those plastic chairs, apparently.
Wow.
And, you know, you'd have to think to yourself, is there, again, if there is a reusable device available that does the same thing and maybe does a bit more, is probably similar in price and is reusable, maybe that's the way to go. The other beauty, I think, of smart connected pens and devices is that you compare them with your CGM. So you compare them with your Dexcom data on glucuridiazin. It's probably all glucose now, I guess.
Yeah.
You compare them with Libre on the Freestyle Libre app.
Yeah.
And then you can see the glucose data and the insulin data in the same place at the same time.
Yeah.
And it can really give you a picture of what's going on. And it can help your healthcare provider and yourself have these open, frank, and granular discussions about how things are going, what's happening, and maybe what changes potentially could be made to help improve things, or if there's something kind of, again, sometimes you can see things about timing or that you've forgotten a dose. Would you believe, and I was reading this in one of the smart pen studies, one in 20 people miss at least one long-acting injection every 14 days. And sometimes when you're kind of looking to make a change to the dose of insulin you might be taking, if you are high for a couple of mornings in a row, you might think that you should increase your long-acting insulin. But if actually just you've kind of just forgotten to take a dose, for example. It's had that knock-on effect. And now you can go back and you'll know that just by chance a dose happened to get missed for whatever reason. And then you can make a better decision. I think for us in clinic, and it's not just in the UK, I used to offer this to anyone on insulin, actually. So we used to use it in gestational diabetes in pregnancy, type 2 diabetes, other types of diabetes. And it was just a game changer. So you'd be in clinic and you'd be able to see all this data. You'd be able to look at what the total daily dose of insulin was. You have these really rich data-driven consultations. And you could have this frank, open, and engaging dialogue where you can sit down with the person and just have a look at it. And I think the other beauty is now with the COVID-19 pandemic, I think everyone should have the option, of course, but I think the days of the kind of the written logbook are maybe coming closer to an end, perhaps. I know some people still want it and they're highly beneficial for people. And if a person wants it, absolutely. But if during COVID, you'd make a telephone call and you try and offer advice on the telephone, you know, and you'd be trying to record the data, and it's just really challenging. And certainly in Ireland, CGM wasn't fully available, I think, just at the start of COVID. And you wouldn't have the glucose data and you wouldn't really have the insulin data. And actually, the number of meaningful changes you could try and help with or maybe suggest over the telephone with limited data was, as you can imagine, quite limited. I think now, when we're doing these virtual consultations, we'd have the glucose data and the insulin data. And a wonderful initiative that my colleague, Professor Derek O'Keefe, is running in Galway is this idea of a virtual hospital. So the virtual hospital for a person living with diabetes might be, and this could be steroid-induced diabetes, this could be gestational diabetes, type 1 diabetes, type 2, some other type of diabetes, is that you'd be able to maybe leave hospital earlier and your healthcare provider would be able to look at your data. You'd occupy a bed in a virtual ward, let's call it, and your healthcare provider may be able to look at your data virtually, so that instead of being in hospital for an extra few days because you have steroid diabetes, for example, you could be at home and getting the adjustments made remotely. So I think smart pens, especially paired with CGM, just have the ability to revolutionize of care. The other thing actually we see in hospital, and I'm very curious to see when this will take off actually, is so when a person is in hospital, as you probably all know, that you kind of, an insulin injection is administered, it requires a member of staff to record the dose, at least in Ireland anyway, on a paper sheet. And I often wonder how accurate these doses are. And you never know exactly what time the dose was administered.
No.
Because again, the person is often recording, they're going around to do their drug round, for example, and they're offering the different medicines to all the different people in the hospital. And just the recording sometimes isn't maybe where you might like it to be. And I think when we have smart connected devices, I think that'll replace the manual recording of insulin administration. And when people are in hospital, there's more than just the people can be getting all a variety of different insulin injections at different times, depending on the person's specific needs. Sometimes the person isn't in a position kind of to maybe make a good record themselves, I suppose, because they're quite sick. So then unless the record that the person administering the insulin is accurate and correct and timely, it can be hard to make a good adjustment. I think the other thing is kind of in hospital, then you're kind of a person might be used to having their CGM data. But if you're in the manual log, you'll have the 4 or 5 readings a day with the insulin. So actually the quantity of data has declines perhaps. But I think with smart pens paired with CGM in hospital, I think that'll revolutionize kind of diabetes care in hospital, and definitely for the better, actually, I think.
Absolutely. I didn't even think of that point, actually. So actually, you make such a strong point and case there. And I think, yeah, I think I'm all for smart pens and the features of it. I think the frustration for me is for things like where I'm on Dexcom G6. And obviously, the Freestyle Libre has the capability now in the past year or so to have all the sort of data there. So obviously, you check your bloods and also you can have your smart pen synced. I know you mentioned, obviously, Gluco and different third-party apps. It just be for the way forward for me is having it all in one place, because as you know, diabetes can be overwhelming. It's 24/7, it's relentless data sort of I'm trying to think of the word, data overload or whatever, can be a thing at times, and going from one app to the other can, you know what I mean, it can contribute to sort of the burnout and stuff. So hopefully I think it's crossed that they can integrate it all together, because I think that'll help us, but also I think probably help you guys as well, rather than having 12 different tabs open with different things potentially. But yeah, I think that's a great sort of little chat there about smart pens. Just a few points from people that tuned in. Let's have a look. My mind has just completely gone blank. I can't. Liz, like, she's got a new name on Twitter, and I was like, who is that? Liz says, I found, because she's on the InPen. The InPen is a game changer. 30 less insulin usage, no rage bolusing. As you can see, what insulin on board. That's another feature. Plus a drop of HbA1c from 53 to 50 in 6 months. Like, that's just sensational, that, right? That's great. Oh, I think we've lost again.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point in hospitals. Smart pens would give them the medical staff, you know, it'd stop them having to write down stuff on the papers and stuff, and 100%. You know, it'd be more continuation of the care, wouldn't they? You know, if they're ill in hospital, the last thing you want is to worry about, is that insulin going to be enough, or do I need some? You know what I mean? It's That's really interesting talk. But Thomas mentioned there about, you know, that'd be a great way forward. You know, I wrote a care plan during COVID times. If I was admitted to hospital, you know, obviously running at 100 APS, I wouldn't want it taken off me, put it that way. But if you put on a sliding scale, and they managed it differently. But I had some foot surgery a few years ago, Tom, as you know, and my anaesthetist said, I'm quite happy to leave your pump and your closed loop running. Just, you know, my phone was unlocked and he could see it, you know, for an hour and 20 minutes or whatever. He knew that my diabetes wasn't an issue, kind of thing. It was all under control, thanks to a management plan that was sort of semi-automatic. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%. But I think that was such a fascinating chat. I think we've lost Thomas. Hopefully we'll get him back in a sec to finish tonight's chat. But yeah, some really valid points that I hadn't really thought about. And obviously Liz mentioned about the InPen. I think we got Thomas back. I don't know if you
kind of... I could hear you all, but I think I just missed out one of the words.
I don't know what's going on with tech tonight. But yeah, you know what I mean? Super nice to see that there are options, and Liz is using the InPen, and it's obviously helped her in terms of 30 less insulin usage, no rage bolusing, seeing insulin on board, dropping her A1C by 3 in the past 6 months. And also she said about having all the data in one place, which is really great. I think it's really, really good, and it gives people that choice. There's a lot of talk about pumps and hybrid closed loop at the minute, but for me, access and choice, it's providing that toolkit of diabetes care, isn't it, and saying, look, these are the options for how you can blood glucose check, and these are the options you can administer your insulin, and what would you like to go on that path, on that journey, what would you like, and it's, yeah, having people like yourself who can sort of provide that. Liz, let's bring you in before we finish on tonight's chat. Was there any points you wanted to raise, question, comment, Thomas, on smart pens? Because I know you're a big smart pen user and advocate.
One thing, hi everyone, hi Thomas. One thing, not everybody wants a pomatomorphs, as I'm sure you found in clinic. I'm quite happy with using the smart pen. I just found the in pen is phenomenal compared to the Novo Nordisk one that I was using, because as Tom just said, all the data is one place, in one place. And what I found is I can see my insulin on board for the first time in 46 years. I never knew how much insulin I had in me. And one thing that kind of wrecks my head is I can't see my slow-acting insulin. And that I know it's working away, but one thing that I personally found is the usage of my insulin, like to drop about 30% in insulin requirements in 6 months, to me is like I was getting as big as a house, but on weight with the amount of insulin I was taking. But now I'm finding, because I can see the insulin on board, I'm not rage bolusing. I know it's going to come down because I can see it. I just find the in-pens fantastic. As I say, I don't want a pump, but and again, one thing that I did say to Thomas is that we need you as the HSC diabetes lead in 2025. Sorry.
Thanks very much for the wonderful compliment. I think with the N-Pen, I must say I have no problem offering N-Pen to anyone who would like it. I've seen the N-Pen and got a chance to look at it and see how it works and to look at the different apps and stuff. But I've never had anyone specifically ask me. I think, as you know, one of the challenges in Ireland is about kind of the actual smart pens aren't readily funded. I think a lot of people love their Dexcom or Libre, and some people would like to use their Guardian if they have a Guardian 4 sensor, maybe would like to use it with a pump.
I should have said I'm not using it with the Medtronic G4 because I had too many problems with it. I'm actually using it with the Dexcom G6. Sorry, I should have said that.
That's great. And I'm happy to, we'd have no problem if someone came to me and said they wanted it, we'd organize it in our service, we'd get it for them. But it's I think it's lovely to have this spread of opportunities. And as you say, I think pumps are not for everybody. And I think it's really important that we have the spread of choices. So whether it's I think kind of smart connected pens or smart connected devices or smart connected caps, or just even a pump that's not, I look after people who use pump and open loop and love using pump and open loop and would never want to go onto hybrid closed loop, or have tried hybrid closed loop and just prefer open loop. So we should have that option as well. The option of hybrid closed loop is really important. I think it's just offering an a la carte menu of the different choices that are available, trying to offer the best advice or best data so that the person living with diabetes can make the choice that best suits their specific needs at a given moment in time. I think that's what that's what we try to do where we are.
It's all about choice, isn't it? Here in the southeast in Waterford, we don't have access, adults don't have access to insulin pumps yet.
This will change, I think. I think there's been huge strides made in Ireland, I think, offering more. And again, we'd all like it to happen overnight. I certainly would, but I think looking at how diabetes is delivered in Ireland in 2024 versus 2026, I think it will look very, very different. And I think it'll be very, very, I'm very, very hopeful that the difference would be very, very positive in the next 2 years. And again, I think the community piece, where people living with type 2 diabetes are getting care closer to where they live, I think that's what will actually help to free up kind of hospital resources to better help get pumps on board, to get smart pens, smart connected devices and CGMs on board. So I think that's where we'll really see, or at least that's what the hope is anyway, that's why the difference will occur and where we really see the difference.
One of the major changes here in the southeast, well, in Waterford, where I'm based, is the community care that you mentioned that was brought in for type 2s. The clinic that we have here is phenomenal. It's fully staffed, and now it's giving, again, the hospital the chance to move the people that need to be moved out into the community, which will be great, I personally think, for a type 1 point of view, as it will give us more appointments. We'll be able to get our 2 yearly appointments. Previously, 4 or 5 years ago, I was waiting 2 or 3 years to get an appointment. So, again, from my own personal point of view, from what I've seen in the changes in type 1 diabetes care here in Ireland over the last 3-4 years, it really is changing, but it definitely needs a lot more changing. And like you said, 2026 here in Ireland will probably be a lot different to where we are in 2024. And thank you for all of your help.
I think actually you mentioned, and thank you for all the nice comments. I think that you mentioned 2 yearly appointments. I think actually I think there's a time in the future where we'll have, as needed appointments. That's not the right word. The word is gone for me, but so let's say you have 2 yearly appointments, but let's say everything's going really well at 6 months and actually you don't need to be seen, and that potentially you could defer that. But then the next year, maybe things just, you need a bit of hand, you need something different at month 3, and you have to wait till month 6. I think a space where we can offer kind of an appointment as needed maybe as well, and maybe an IT system where some appointments can be delayed and some can be moved forward just to meet a person's needs. I think that would be really great and something we could really aspire to in Ireland. I don't know what you would think of that.
That would be absolutely fantastic. I have personally, and I don't mind saying it, I have diabetes complications, but for me, my complications are the worst part of living with diabetes. Diabetes I can manage, it's well controlled. I haven't got a problem with managing it, but it's the complications I have an issue with. And my endo is managing those for me. So when I go, I speak about my complications and not about my diabetes, if you get me. So for me, I wouldn't mind waiting 18 months to 2 years for a diabetes review, if that's what was needed into the future. I do think it would be a good idea.
But the trade-off there is that potentially then if you actually needed to be seen in 3 months, that appointment would be available for you, if that makes sense.
No, I do. It totally makes sense. And I think that's a fantastic idea. Brilliant if it'll come to pass.
It's ambitious, but it would be great. Again, I think if it did come to pass, it would be brilliant for everyone, I think.
Fantastic conversation, guys. Some lovely messages coming through. PK says, thanks, Diabetes Chat community, and Thomas. Fantastic Diabetes Chat with lots of exciting things in the pipeline. # language matters that we talked about before. Rich, but wow, what an incredible evening. Truly amazing speaking to Professor Thomas Griffin, with him sharing his passion and desire to improve diabetes management and improving outcomes for our community. And let's have a look. Rob says, # diabetes chat, smart pens whilst I await availability of a pump has been a real saver a couple of times when forgot I've taken. Great idea for me, like less waste as well from a green perspective. Amen to all that, really. And I think it's great for the people who are on pumps to have smart pens as their sort of backup as well, personally. But yeah, fantastic chat. Lots of lovely messages coming through. And I think the community have really enjoyed tonight's chat. Thomas, I just want to end on one final question, if it's all right.
Of course.
What are your hopes and aspirations for diabetes care and management going forward?
So there's the realistic short-term hopes and the more aspirational long-term hopes. I think in Ireland, my hopes would be, and I think some of these things won't be the same hopes that you'd have if you're listening from the UK. One is that we get more access, which is very close, I believe, to glucose test strips, or funded glucose test strips and CGMs for women who live with gestational diabetes. I think that would probably be my top aspiration in the short term in Ireland, because I think it will come to pass very soon, or has started to come to pass. Number two would be CGM for people living with type 2 diabetes and multiple daily injections, or basal insulin. Again, I think that's something to aspire to in Ireland. Again, I know if you're in the UK, the aspirations might look slightly different. Third is equitable access to diabetes and diabetes technologies for people living with all types of diabetes, so that if you need something, that you get it, and it shouldn't matter whether you live in Leicester or Cornwall or London or Birmingham, that the access should be the same. I think in a more long term, I think looking at the new trials of teplizumab and the new agents, and Inodia, I think Inodia is a really powerful organization looking to find a potential cure for diabetes. I think that's really exciting. I think there's work in the stem cell therapy field. If you look at Vertex in the US, I think they have N=1 reports of stem cell therapy being potentially curative for a person living with type 1 diabetes. And I think that's really exciting. I think fully closed loop, I think that's not too far away, I'd imagine. And I think that's really exciting technology as well. So I've offered some kind of short term, which are probably more relevant to Ireland, I suspect, than the UK, and maybe some kind of medium to long term, which I know we've all hoped for a long time. But I think kind of in the next 10 or 15 years, probably 5 years, I'd imagine, for kind of fully closed loop, are definitely realistic things to hope for.
Yeah, absolutely. And how diabetes care management has changed in the years that you've been a diabetes consultant and registrar, you know what I mean, to where we are now in 2024. And hopefully the gap will get smaller, and hopefully access will be available for all. And you highlight some fantastic hopes and aspirations for the sort of foreseeable future, really. So absolutely amazing. Honestly, thank you so much for coming on tonight and being our guest speaker. And I just want to echo Richard's thank you earlier on, when you obviously said all the lovely kind things about Diabetes Chat. You know what I mean, it's such an honor to be able to host these weekly things, chats, where we hang out with people like-minded from all over the world, and we chat, we learn from each other. And to have the opportunity to be able to connect with guest speakers from all backgrounds, whether it's an advocate, whether it's a sports athlete, or people like yourself in the healthcare professional system, is just really tremendous. And it's great. And it's been an honor to have you on tonight. And it's been great working with you seeing you and chatting offline the last couple of months. But having the honor of you having been here tonight is great. And hopefully we'll be able to do further things along the line. And are you off to ATTD? Are you off to? I'm trying to see where you're off to, Thomas. Now I'm not stalking.
I'm off to ATTD. I'm very excited about that. Actually, brilliant. But I must say, actually, one of the things, and I said this earlier, but I literally feel like Paul McGrath walking into the Giants Stadium when Ireland played Italy in '94. Like all the people you've had on, like I think you've had Pratik and Partha. And like the list of people you've had come on is just truly outstanding. And it's the who's who. Again, I don't count myself in this group, but you've had the who's who of people who look after or who are involved with diabetes care. And it's just really, really amazing. And I think I can, as I said earlier, I think I can say this for everyone. And the work you do is splendid. And I'd really encourage that you continue this fantastic work, because it really offers the opportunity for people to share ideas and thoughts and to support everyone. And it's supporting, as I said earlier, just not people living with diabetes, it's supporting the healthcare providers as well, who are trying to learn how to do better. Sometimes we get it wrong. And I say this sometimes when I'm giving talks, I apologize in advance when I get it wrong. But opportunities like this really help me to learn how to deliver, maybe try to deliver or be a better doctor, and to try and deliver better care to people I come across. So thank you so much, and thank you for your hard work.
Well, Mason, thank you so much. I hope that everyone has fully enjoyed it. I definitely have, Rich. I know you have. It's been really empowering tonight, and thankful for the opportunity to connect up, and I wish you all the best in ACTD. Are you speaking, or are you having a great opportunity of going around and seeing some of the fantastic stuff that's coming out?
I'm just looking forward to going around and seeing what's coming out. Things like ACTD, I feel like a child at Christmas.
Yes.
All these really exciting things that you get to see before you open the wrapper, say like peek into the boxes. It's amazing.
100%.
Have a great time. It'd be nice to catch up at some point, Thomas. You're a legend, mate, honestly. Thank you very much.
Well,
absolutely fantastic.
Diabetes Chat are on tour in Derry in May. So like Rich said, we do the JDRF Discovery Days now, where we go to the events and we run in-person events. So if you're in that area, then we're always there. Or I don't know if you're going to Diabetes UK conference in April, isn't it? I will be there. I will see you there. I look forward to it. We should definitely catch you up for us.
And we have some lovely events in Ireland that we'd love to get you over for. So we're doing a
please do.
Diabetes technology event on the 23rd of May, which a guy called Ken Barkey has kindly agreed to speak at. But maybe next year, if this is something you're interested in, we'd love to have you over, you know?
100%. Yeah, just link us up and we'll be there for sure. 100%.
Yeah, so definite. That's wonderful.
Brilliant stuff. Thank you so much, Thomas. I know we have gone over time as well, but honestly, thank you for coming on. And yeah, we'll catch up soon, and thanks again.
Cool. Thank you all so much. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, Thomas. You take care. All the best.
Bye-bye.